Hi there, Callum from Scarce Reducing here. Thank you for downloading this episode. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope that you realise we will be spoiling the movie. So if you haven't already seen the movie that you're about to listen to, please make sure that you do, or don't complain to us. But if you could please like, share, subscribe, do all the usual stuff, that would really help us out. And I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of Scared Reducing, the horror movie podcast for horror movie virgins. I'm Callum McNabb.
He's Ellen Martinez.
And we are back after an extended break in which we had numerous guests over from the land of Mexico. And we haven't really been watching movies, been thinking about movies over the last month or so. But now they are gone. Life has returned to normal. And it is spooky season.
Yes, it is.
Halloween time. It is the time of sweets, candies, cozy nights inside, and ghosts. All good things spooky and devilish and Halloween-y. Mm. And of course, we are beginning this sort of season. I've said that word so many times now in the last minute and a half. But we are beginning it with a descent into hell. 2022's 11th installment reboot / reimagining of Clive Barker's The Hellbound Heart novella, and it is 2022's Hellraiser.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It's really nice.
You can hold it.
What is it?
It's a puzzle.
And it's almost finished.
Keep going.
So if I solve it, do I get a prize?
I do.
So, before we go any further, Hazella, can you explain your relationship with the Hellraiser franchise at all?
We don't have a relationship, that's the thing. I didn't know anything about it.
Okay.
Didn't know it was based on novels, books, or something like that. Didn't know if it's... I didn't know. The only thing I knew, it was like a remake.
Mm-hmm.
From original ones. I seen the pinhead figure in like shops, like you know, like those kind of shops that they sell, like
the little toys, the little, what do you call them? We've got one of Pennywise. Is that what you're talking
Funkos.
About?
Funkos.
Yeah, Funko toys Funko, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do they have a pinhead one? I imagine they probably
I
do.
Think so. I've seen that on that. Or like in t-shirts. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, you know, like in those American stores.
Yeah.
That they sell like this, like goth stuff and t-shirts of all the horror movies and Chucky's dolls and things like that. Well, I've seen that image. Apart from that, I have no idea what's about. I don't know what that thing does. So this was my first... like experience with this
franchise,
yeah.
And I suppose it's not necessarily a bad thing, it's not necessarily a good thing, but it is a starting point of sorts, because as you say, this is a remake, this is a reimagining, this is starting all over again. Hellraiser has 10 movies prior to this, 4 of which were released in cinemas. Hellraiser,
mm-hmm.
Hellbound, I think the second one's called. Then Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, and Hellraiser 4, Bloodline, all in the cinemas.
Hellraiser 4 Bloodline has Adam Scott in it as well, who is in Krampus, the dad in Krampus.
Oh,
he's also
in
Parks and Rec.
Love him.
He's in Hellraiser 4.
He's the devil on The Good Place.
Yes, he is, yes. So he is in Hellraiser
4. And he's 4.
He's in the Verizon ads. And we know that because we have a VPN. Today's episode was brought to you by ExpressVPN. which is how we watch this movie, because as far as I'm aware, it is not out in the UK as of yet. And
yeah,
so we just used a friend's Hulu account.
Where is going to be this?
No idea. I imagine Disney Plus. For anyone who thinks that sounds weird, it's because Disney Plus in the UK comes with Star.
Yeah.
Like, they come as a joint package. You cannot get one without the other. So,
all the Stars, like, stuff
is on Hulu.
Yeah.
So we watch this on Hulu. But that's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is that there are 10 films. 4 came out in the cinema between 1987 or something and 1986 or something like that. So over the course of those 10 years or so, 4 are released in cinemas. Then they start to release them straight to DVD. Hellraiser 5 through 10, all straight to DVD.
Is there someone famous on those DVD releases?
So this is the interesting thing. I wanted to watch all 10.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't care if it's a remake or reboot. I haven't seen this franchise. I'd seen the first one. That was it. Then I was like, I want to watch all 10. And so thanks to VPN and Shudder and Arrow Video and all that stuff, I was able to find Hellraiser 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 9, I think. I couldn't find 8 or 10. So something like that. I can't remember. There was 2 I couldn't find. I ended up only watching 5. So I've only seen one of the straight-to-DVD ones.
Okay.
Which is called Hellraiser Inferno. But it was directed by Scott Derrickson in his directorial debut.
Who is this person?
He's terrible with names. We already covered a Scott Derrickson movie on the podcast this year. The Black Phone. He directed The Black Phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He directed The Exorcism of Emily Rose. He directed Sinister. He directed the first Doctor Strange.
Oh.
And The Black Phone. Well, his first movie is Hellraiser
5. He's quite young, right? Oh, he looks young. Is the guy that does the 101 movies...
The show we're watching
on
Shudder.
No,
he's not on there. I don't think so.
Yeah, he's his Black Phone in the bottom.
No, it says producer of The Black Phone. Doesn't say director.
That's why he's young.
Scott Derrickson. Let's get his age. He is 56.
Okay.
So yes, his directorial debut is Hellraiser Inferno. Which is, as I say, so that's, I've seen 5 of them. Then I gave up. I thought, do you know what? I don't need to see 6 through 10. But what I'm trying to get at is I actually enjoyed this franchise more than I expected to.
Mm-hmm.
I know this franchise has a bit of a reputation of, especially once it gets to the straight to DVD 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and 10s, that the output declines drastically. And that might be true. As I say, I did not see 6 to 10. I know it has a reputation of it was owned by Miramax,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm assuming it ends up, because the Weinsteins, as we know, hate their name, but they leave Miramax and form their own company, so I'm assuming it goes with them. It has a reputation of they would just buy scripts that had nothing to do with Hellraiser,
mm-hmm.
and then just find a way, put Pinhead in this script, or put the Cenobites in this script.
Yeah.
So
they got lazy then.
I think so.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of those movies. There are rumours that Hellraiser 5, Inferno, the last one I watched, there are rumours that that is how that movie came about. Scott Derrickson denies this. He says that was always intended to be a Hellraiser movie. So I'll take his word for it. But what I'm trying to say is for those 5 movies, I quite enjoyed this franchise.
Okay.
There are bad movies in there. And most people will say Hellraiser 3, and they are wrong. Hellraiser 3 is great. Hellraiser 4 is bad, but it has interesting ideas. It's interesting to watch, but it's badly done. Hellraiser 5 is odd. It is a corrupt cop wandering the streets of LA or something. I don't know exactly which city he's in. looking for someone who's framed him for this murder, and then it turns out he believes it's maybe a demon or there's something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a cop procedural noir mixed with Hellraiser. It's weird.
But we are not here to talk about this.
No, we're here to talk about 2022's version. And the reason I'm setting up all my expectations of the franchise is that I have found this franchise to be...
strong?
Not strong, because as I say, there are bad movies in it.
Decent.
Willing to take chances and willing to do something new and weird and willing to try new things. Again, you'll have to forgive me if you are sitting there now going, Hellraiser 6, whatever it's called, there's Judgment, there's Bloodline, I've seen Bloodline, there's Hellworld. I can't even remember them, what they're called. But if you're sitting there going, these ones are so lazy and they take no chances, then forgive me, I haven't seen them. I am comparing Hellraiser 2022 and how it fits in with the first five, especially the first four, because they are the ones that got a big enough budget to come out to cinemas. Although this one didn't come out to cinemas. I'm rambling. My point is to set all this up. I think this new one, mm-hmm. and here's my controversial opinion, is my least favourite of the six that I've seen.
Okay.
I think all other five Hellraiser... yeah, so this is now the sixth.
Oh, okay. So from all the five you're seeing, this is your least.
No, I've seen six. All six I've seen, this is my least favourite.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Now, it's not the worst film out of those six. Mm-hmm. It's better produced, it's better acted, it's better shot. It is objectively a fine film in terms of... it's solid. But I think this movie is very, very tame.
I think that's where we disagree. I think it's okay, and I don't have a point of comparison with the other movies. I can't compare, so mm-hmm. to me it was okay.
Before we get into the movie itself, if you are a horror movie virgin, this is obviously an ideal place to start because it is starting the franchise back over again. You do not have to have seen, much like Izella,
well, basically, anything. I'm that person that you're describing.
So, okay and then.
Will you? Yeah.
Well, this is going to go badly. I know it is. But where would you go next?
After this?
Yeah, that's the whole point of the podcast now, isn't it?
13 Ghosts.
What? Oh, what? Oh, why?
The Cabin in the Woods.
Why 13 Ghosts? That's a film I haven't heard in years.
Cabin in the Woods. No,
why 13 Ghosts?
Why 13 Ghosts? Goats.
13 Ghosts.
That would be nightmare.
That'd be your nightmare.
Yeah, I don't like ghosts. Ghost. 13. Okay, why? Because for some reason I was watching this movie and I keep getting flashbacks of 13 Ghosts. I can't remember what's about. I remember this, like...
when did you see 13 Ghosts?
Oh, I think I was high school.
Yeah, I think the same. Like, 13 Ghosts was
I remember watching with my friends in a house.
Yeah.
And then re-watching, I get rented it for another party. Like, I remember that was a popular film to rent.
2001 it came out.
Yeah, so it was a popular film to rent. And I don't know, like, I think the kind of ghost that they show mm-hmm. here... they feel so retro, like, or feel so 13 Ghosts. And I was like,
the Cenobites from this movie.
Yes, yep. Those monsters or whatever. So yeah, that's why I was like, I think I will, only because it kind of triggers something on me, I will watch 13 Ghosts or like kind of like Cabin in the Woods, just because it shows a lot of demons, ghosts, different... mm-hmm. characters.
But Cabin in the Woods is much more of a satire comedy.
Yes, taking the piss aspect. I know, but after seeing this, maybe taking a piss of this kind of movies, I will say, like, oh, let's put monster here and this one that represent this and that one that does this. And if you pick that one,
there is a character in Cabin in the Woods that it's not quite Pinhead, but it is when she's going through the box. It has like an orb,
like an orb.
It's got stuff in its head. Yeah, it's. Yeah,
and you don't know what it does. Yeah, and it's like, oh, maybe that's something like this. And it's kind of like a puzzle thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those two movies, I'll go from this.
That is, I think, the first time on this podcast that Hizela has ever given a recommendation of where to go next. And I have to say, 13 Ghosts is not a film that I expected. So I'm going to ask you that question in episodes more often because that was out of nowhere. I did not expect that. I would say, obviously... go to the Hellraiser franchise. Obvious, very obvious linear decision making. That's fine. from Hellraiser franchise, I think it's sort of a proto... I think most people agree. It's a very proto torture porn genre, so you can get into the Saw franchise or the Hostel franchise quite easily after you've gone to Hellraiser. From there, you can then go down... From torture porn, you can go to, for example, torture porn and a film about demons and the mystical and what lies beyond and pleasures of human, what all that stuff. That is Martyrs, the French film.
Oh, I think you're going so extreme. I mean, are you basing this on the franchise?
That's what I'm saying. But no, I'm saying go from this movie, 2022.
Oh, yeah, it's too extreme to go. Okay.
Go to Hellraiser.
And then go to the...
Then go to Saw. Uh-huh. And then from Saw, go to Martyrs.
Okay.
Maybe it is a step up each time, but that's what I'm saying about this film. For me, I think that's a pretty linear decision making.
Okay.
Like, I can see the lines there. But if I was to say from this movie, watching this 2022 version, and then saying follow up with Martyrs, I would agree with you. I'd be like, that's a bit of a jump. But I don't think it... But also, as well, let's just say, you could go down the director's career, because it's directed by David Bruckner, who has directed a few films. We've seen one of them, I think. Yes. He directed The Ritual, which I want to see, but have not.
Yeah, I've seen it.
He directed The Night House, which we did see.
Oh, yeah, I did like that.
Yes, so did I. And then Hellraiser.
Okay, that's not bad.
It's not bad, but he's sort of like a new up-and-coming, you know, people like his films and stuff. So I was a bit... Oh, David Bruckner liked his last movie. As I say, I've only seen one. I'm interested in his first movie. And also the reviews that this is getting Hellraiser back on track. That obviously it's gone off the rails. Straight to DVD. It's sort of be garbage trash. Dollar bin store buckets. You know, bargain bin buckets, DVDs. Nobody's cared about the franchise in numerous years. We are back on track. We're getting... relatively solid director in, someone who people like.
Mm-hmm.
We've recast Pinhead. So it's now played by Jamie Clayton, is I believe her name. Yes, Jamie Clayton, who is a trans actress. So there's...
Oh, this one? Okay.
Yeah, who plays Pinhead. I think it's the first trans actress to play a horror. In fact, I think. I know it is. There isn't any trans actress that's played Michael Myers or... Jason, or like one of the horror icons.
And that's
the first one.
That's so weird because some of the characters, like in horror movies, like demons and things like that, I mean, why did it need to be female or masculine or like, you know, to be more open to just like.
It's... So that's kind of what this franchise is sort of all about. The Cenobites, the demons, the angels, or whatever they are. Humanoid, I think they're previous humans, they've gone to this hell or this other dimension and been tortured beyond all recognition, that they now are genderless, essentially.
You know what it reminds me of? Like all this, how do you call them?
Cenobites. Yeah.
Oh, what that means?
That's the name of the creatures.
Oh, the creatures. I'm going to call it creatures because I'm going to forget that name. Well, this creature reminds me of that episode of Rick and Morty when they go... When all these demons like have like a deal with Rick to get Jerry to make fun of, like, he just laugh of him because that caused them pleasure, that caused them pain, you know?
No, I don't remember that episode.
And they are like all like that. They're exactly like that.
Yes,
they look exactly like those monsters.
That's exactly what it is. They are,
and they come from like the deep parts of hell or something.
Yes, they're taking the piss out of...
That makes sense now, because...
There's even one of them that's got a camera in his face, which is from Hellraiser 3.
Oh, okay, there you go.
And stretched skin, etc. Yeah, they are.
I get it now.
So it makes sense to me, like, it's not a problem casting. Like, I've seen when the casting was announced, a lot of horror fans behind it, a lot of people... behind it, but then of course you get the sort of right wing, the Trump supporters, the etc. calling woke, like this is woke casting, and that's all you're trying to do. And from my aspect, it's good PR, it's good public relations from you from a business standpoint, but from an artistic standpoint, It doesn't matter because Pinhead is like an angel demon that is interested in pain and pleasure as one thing. It doesn't really matter if it's a man or woman or non-binary person. It really doesn't make any difference
exactly.
to the story you are telling. And of course, Clive Barker, who wrote the original story and directed the first film and has produced the second one. I think he's had a production credit on a few of them. He is famously gay, and Hellraiser is inspired by the sort of gay kink subculture of the 80s. Like, making this franchise, or trying to get it more involved with queer culture or LGBTQ.
Yeah, I can see the queerness in the movie.
There's no problem.
Yeah.
My problem from this movie
is too
obvious. Think this movie is so straight.
Oh, okay.
I mean, objectively, it has two gay characters.
Yeah,
in it.
It has a
trans woman playing Pinhead. Okay, but to me, watching it, it felt like a checkbox exercise.
Okay.
We have a gay couple. Boom, we've done our work. And you're like, right. But it doesn't feel... The first movie has zero gay characters, right? Mm-hmm. The first movie has zero gay love scenes. It has nobody gender transitioning or anybody who's dealing with those thoughts or none of that, right, in the first movie. To me, the first movie feels way more gay than this movie.
Okay, let's talk about this movie then.
In terms of, like, how straight people can become gay icons, that sort of thing, you mm-hmm. know, even though they're not, I don't know, there's just something about it that just feels, I don't know, tangible in a sense. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, because I'm not gay myself. Maybe I'm wrong. People tell me I'm wrong, but I found this movie objectively tame. That was my main issue with it. And that, as I say, critics and people had started to sort of build it up as like, oh, it's getting the franchise back on track. I was hoping for a bit more nastiness, a bit more, I don't know, something a bit... You're dealing with...
Well, if you're bringing something back in 2022 and you want it to be kind of like a hit or something, you need to be a little bit tame. I will
say... That's so sad because we're supposed to be more
open. Well, it doesn't matter. Maybe it's going to go and keep going. I mean, about if you wanted more like blood or gore or like explicit things. And also if something's going straight to Hulu, not mm-hmm. the cinemas... So I will say, okay, I'll keep it just safe to get, as you say, like your podcast, and then get a blank check or get more opportunity, more freedom the next one, you know?
I think, yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, let's make it like, I think something like young adults can watch it maybe.
Okay. I can see what you're saying. But what I mean is not in terms of blood and guts and stuff.
And I say explicit
stuff. And not in terms of explicit. I mean in terms of what you're talking about. The movie's about. The movie is dealing with Cenobites from hell who cannot differentiate between pain and pleasure.
No, offering up. That's what I got. Anyway, can we talk about
it? That is what the movie's about.
Well, no. They're like, okay. There are like these things that can... Like, they take these offers, so people.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you can ask for something.
Right. That's what I mean, right? So we'll get into it when we talk about the movie, which we're going to in a minute, right? I get that. But what I'm saying is you're dealing with all this stuff and the Cenobites, everything. It's pain, pleasure, angels, demons, id and ego and superego. It's all these things, right?
Yeah, but you learned that all these really at the end of the movie.
This I'm trying to get at. None of that is dealt with at all from my perspective. It is this movie.
Because it's at the end of the movie.
I think this movie is much closer to just a teen slasher movie. Kind of like, what was the Netflix teen series that was on last year? Fear Street.
The Nightclub.
Fear Street. The three movies that were out last year. Just a slasher movie. And we'll put this in about demons in it. Really doesn't have anything to say or anything to even discuss. It doesn't want to get nasty. It doesn't want to get gross and weird.
I just think it's building because you learn all these things that you're talking about, you learn at the end. At the last part of the movie, like, oh, okay, so all of this represents something. Each configuration of this box represents something. and blah, 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 and you can get something and whatever. Like, it just give you things to work with.
It's too little, too late, in my opinion.
Because you have seen the other movies. I haven't seen the other movies that deal more with this
that you're talking about.
Hold on. I learned this after, like, probably, what, like, 3/4 in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned all these things, like, oh, okay. And maybe you're going to explore this in the next movie.
Right.
If you give this director the chance and everything,
why
you're
then,
see more.
Why then go back to the start of Hellraiser? Why then start all over again if you're not going to deal with it? You say I'm dealing with it because of the previous movies. In the first movie, they talk about all this
because
stuff.
Because they don't
right
want to like give you everything. Like, they just want to give you an appetizer and maybe like the first blade.
Right. And I'm telling you that this is equivalent to what you would call standard normal British cuisine. This is plain boring. I don't want to go into the main. If this is the starter, boring. There's no seasoning on it.
Well, they just give you a little bit like, oh, look, this is what is coming if you're willing to eat the first part. And it was like, okay.
I'm not that willing, I'm going to be honest.
Okay, well, your problem then, because I saw this movie, not watching the other ones, and I was enjoying it. It was okay. It's not like, oh, I want to show it to everybody. But I was like, oh, yeah, it's there. It's okay. Watch it. Like, if a friend asked me, oh, I'm going to go on a date, and I'm like, yes, okay, go. It's fine. It's fine to go. Like, the same opinion I said for Smile. I will say, yeah. It's the same. I will put them the same. Like, eh, it was fine. It was okay. You can safely tell someone super mainstream to go and watch this movie with a date, and they were like, okay, you're going to get a couple of jump scares, and it has a background story or something.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Okay.
I'm not that harsh as you.
Fair enough, but what I'm saying is the one from the 80s was a hit. It was a hit. Like, it spawned a franchise. It was a hit. And so I'm saying, if that was mainstream enough to become a hit in the 80s, why are we not able to get that weird now? Why is it
the 80s got a trend of doing all this kind of movies?
Why is it going to have to be tamed down and toned down in order for people to be interested in it?
Because
weird right from the start.
Right now,
surely we're more
right
open
now,
to
Carlos,
ideas.
There's no, it's not a thing. Right now, we are still in psychological horror. We still not prepared for this kind of camp horror mood. Like, in the 80s, it was a thing.
But it is psychological.
Oh, where is psychological?
Exactly. Exactly my point.
I didn't see psychological this.
Yes, I agree. In this one,
that's what I'm saying.
And that's what
that's why they're being bland. They're like processing.
So they are bland.
They're like a bird mom, like chewing the food and putting in the other baby bird first. And then you're like, oh, okay, my stomach can process this.
So
okay?
They are being bland.
And
you
then the
me.
Bird, and then the bird is going to grow up to like, okay, now I can get the food by myself. So that's what they're doing. Like, look, you can get into this. We don't need to be that extreme.
Okay.
So watch this. And then people are like, okay. And then the next one, it was okay the first. I'll watch the second one. And then, oh my God, okay. There you go. Then they go and kid you with everything they have.
So, at a party, the film opens during a party.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it actually opens in Serbia, but that's not really a scene. It's sort of just like set dressing. At a party for a millionaire, Roland Voigt, in his mansion, Joey, who is apparently a sex worker. I didn't get this from the movie at all.
I didn't get it.
The movie is so sexless. It's so afraid of sex. I know there's one sex scene, but it's so it's so plain. It's so toned down. It's so tame. Get nasty. Get weird. Get bodily functions in there.
God.
That's what I'm saying. Anyway, Joey is apparently a sex worker. He comes across the box, the puzzle box that is the something configuration. I can't remember the name right now. And the millionaire Roland Voigt insists that if he solves it, he will get a prize. He will get a prize, not Joey, Roland. And Joey solves the puzzle, is stabbed, and then chains fly out from, you know,
and
essentially another dimension.
Yeah.
And he disappears. And then, boom, we cut to 6 years later.
Yeah.
Riley is living with her brother, Matt, and his boyfriend, Colin. Checkbox exercise, we got gay characters in.
Gay couple.
Now, that is not what I'm saying. I'm not saying a checkbox exercise in terms of, oh, they just want to be woke. No. This franchise has got a history with LGBTQ themes and creators and stuff. it just feels like a checkbox exercise to me because they don't want to do anything with it, in my opinion. Anyway, she's living with her brother Matt, his boyfriend Colin, and their roommate Nora, who is played by Kieran Hines' daughter. We discussed this already, Aoife Hines. Mm-hmm. And Gisella recognised her as the Derry Girls.
From Donegal.
From Donegal. And the episode where they do the Carrie scene with the blood and stuff. So there's a horror link as well. And she has got a boyfriend, Trevor. They are both dealing with addiction. They're recovering addicts, I think. And so the brother's not too positive about this boyfriend. You know, you're trying to get healthy or whatever. And so we are dealing with addiction. That's what this movie's about, right? Addiction and loss and trying to overcome. It's pretty standard 2010s quote, art house quote, elevated horror. Right? You know those sort of things where it's like, oh, if we make it about this, but you're like, but that's the metaphor's a one-to-one connection.
Yeah.
You're like, and what about other interpretations? It's not that
deep, yeah.
And they're like, and they just look at you and go, other interpretations? And you're like, yeah. Can you read it another way? And they're like, it's about addiction. And you're like, yeah, I got that. Can I read it another way? And they're like, have you ever met someone that's addicted? And you're like, we're going back to addiction. You know, I feel like the metaphors now are so one-to-one. It was my problem with Men as well. Like, I think horror now is just like, we've put a metaphor in there. And you're like, you've put one metaphor in there.
But it's not that, like, metaphoric. It's just, well, it's just there. Well,
she's addicted, or she's overcoming addiction, and she takes drugs and stuff, and people don't believe what she's seeing because they're like, ah, Riley's on one of her benders again. And it's like, oh, believe people who are addicted, who are struggling with mental health, if they've got problems, believe them, right? And this sort of stuff. That's it. It's just a one-to-one. There's the metaphor, we're going for it. And I just, again, it's so tame and obvious and plain. Anyway, so she finds the box. No, that's not true. Her and Trevor break into somewhere and get the box.
Yes.
And then
so they're trying to sell it for money. Yeah.
She has a fight with her brother. She leaves, goes to the park, solves the box, but does not get cut. Her brother comes, finds the box with her in the park, picks it up. He gets cut, goes to the bathroom. Boom, he is taken away to hell. Like, he disappears.
Yes.
He's gone. And while this is happening, she has a vision of Pinhead, the priest. And that's it. And she's not sure. Was I high? Was I drunk? Was that real?
Is that the priest? It's another...
No, that's Pinhead.
Oh, okay.
So it's not officially called Pinhead. I think in the novel, it's the priest, or it's unnamed, the character.
Oh, okay.
But people called it Pinhead because it's got pins in its head.
Yeah, even the subtitles said.
Yeah,
because we watch it with subtitles.
I think now they might call it Pinhead. But in the first movie, for example, again, go back to the first movie. In the credits, it just says, like, leader of the Cenobites. Like, it doesn't even have a name. It's just, like, the leader. Anyway. So, he's away, and she's like, something took my brother. And so they go on this quasi-adventure mystery to find out where did the brother go. Because he wouldn't just leave. He's not that kind of guy. And that is the movie, basically. It's a mystery movie, which... Hellraiser's already done at this point. As I say, the last one I watched was Hellraiser 5. It's kind of like a noir cop mystery thing. Like, it's done this. It's just, I'm like, really? Is that what we're doing? Teenagers running around looking for someone who's gone missing? I want to get weird. But we don't. So, they end up... I'm just skipping right to the end because I think this movie is so boring. They end up at the mansion. And they find all the books of Roland.
Yes, they found the books where, like, explains all the configurations of how, because the box, every time that someone gets cut, the box changes. It starts as a box, and then it starts like a rhomboid, and then shapes, and then different shapes. So it explains to you why it changes or why, and then the meaning. And there's, like, when they go into this room that used to be Roland's void room, there's pictures of the creatures that he used to see. And she's like, okay, he used to see the same stuff. Okay, they're there or whatever. And we discovered that there's someone in the house like that kills the girl from Donegal. What's her name? Sorry, Noah.
In this film, yeah, sorry.
I think it's Noah.
I'll get you her name. It's Nora.
Nora. Well,
yes, he kills her.
So he kills Nora. But then we learn it's Roland Boyd that is alive,
mm-hmm.
but kind of alive. We'll see.
So he has been trying to get a gift from the gods, essentially. Uh-huh. And his gift was for, like, to know ultimate pleasure, basically. And what they've done in a very monkey's paw type way, they've given him ultimate sensation, but for him it is pain. He has got this contraption mm-hmm. built into his chest that basically constantly twists his nerve endings.
Oh,
so he will always feel, he will never go numb. But from a human standpoint, it is excruciatingly painful. It is not sensation. It is not pleasure.
It is sensation, but it's pain.
But for the Cenobites, those things are one and the same. We don't care. So he is trying to get enough people killed so that the box can go back to its Leviathan configuration, at which point he will be able to talk again to God and get a second gift. He's trying to undo the gift he was given. And we learn that Trevor has been working for him, a twist that for me comes out of nowhere and makes no sense and doesn't matter at all. It's like, oh, Trevor was working for Roland Void, and he got them there. And it's like, they would have got there anyway, because they're looking for the brother Matt. Like, they don't need Trevor to be a bad guy. Like, what difference does that make to the story at all? Nothing. Pointless. It's just an added twist for a twist's sake. Anyway, a few of them end up dead. It, as I say, turns into a bit of a slasher. We find out that you can kill the Cenobites by stabbing them, and that hell will take the Cenobites. It doesn't matter. It'll take anyone. And I'm just a bit like, oh, that's kind of cheap and easy. Like, oh. And what happens at the end? I don't even really remember.
At the end,
Roland gets his gift.
Yes.
And they offer a gift to Riley.
To the girl.
And she says, no, I don't want my brother back.
I see what
your gifts do. Yes. They always come with a little curse, a little
twist.
Be careful what you wish for thing.
Yes.
And so I'm not going to ask for my brother back. And they say, you have chosen guilt or something like that.
Oh, no. Something.
No, on Wikipedia it just says, the priest tells her that she has chosen to live with the guilt of her actions.
Okay, so we don't know the name of the configuration. Or, what, I mean, the thing that she picked. But the demon said, Cenobites said to her, okay, you pick, basically, to live with the pain for... and
knowing
to live,
that your
to
brother...
live, like, all the things that you've done, like everybody die, like who you kill and whatever, so you're gonna suffer silently, blah, blah, blah.
Bit harsh.
Yes, it is. But it's like, yeah, it's true. But then you think, yeah, a lot of people do that on a regular basis. It's just not demons or things like that. Everybody suffers in silence in some different ways. So I was like, oh, okay. Life. Yeah.
One to one.
It's just gonna be life. It's life. It's just harder for her, and they just leave the house, and the friend, the boyfriend, the brothers, Colin just says like, did you pick the right decision? And she's just like crying in the wheel.
Yeah, she doesn't know.
And then to me that's like, oh, she's gonna be back.
She's gonna be back in Hellraiser 2.
Yeah, or something like that.
If they make it.
Because it's like, no, you didn't. Because probably she keeps seeing these demons to remind her what she done. You know, like, okay, you are going to live. They said to her, you're going to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
She did pick something at the end. She's like, I'm not picking anything. I decide nothing. I don't want anything. But at the end, she kind of picks that.
Choice.
That's still a choice.
Yeah.
And they said to her, okay, you are going to live with it. You're going to be hunted for the rest of your life with the decisions you've done to get to this point.
Yeah.
So to me, and at the end, she just not giving an answer to Colin. It's kind of like saying, Hellraiser 2, she keeps seeing things. She's not right. And she can want to get rid of this and learns more about this box that can maybe help her to do something or kind of trick the demons. She learns more. I don't know. There you go. Director, producers, I'm giving you a pitch for a pitch. A pitch.
Yeah.
For your next movie. take this character, still seeing things, learn more about the things, because I think where the things come from. We see at the start of the movie that comes from Serbia. Why is in Serbia?
The box is in Serbia. The Cenobites don't
come from Serbia. Yeah, why was there? What happened before? Give us more of that. I love this kind of things in the movie. Like, give me history of all of the artifacts that you get and things like that.
And of course, we see Roland Voigt being turned into a new Cenobite. We see him.
Yeah, maybe we want to see, like, exactly. Maybe in the next movie, he's going to be there. And
that's if they make another one.
And she has, like, an advantage, like, oh, I know him. I know what he wants or what his pleasure or something, or, like, greedy, or I don't know. I don't know. That they do something with that. You have everything there.
Right, to me.
And then you can make it as extreme as you want, Callum.
It's not about extreme. It's about weird. It's about get into the whole idea of human animal instincts versus human ego and what, you know, we expect from people in society. Like, you know, id and ego and that sort of stuff. Angels, demons, pain, pleasure, sex. Just get weird with it. It doesn't have to be gross. It doesn't have to be explicit bloody on screen. But I just want to sit there and think, oh, wow, I never considered that aspect before. Or whatever. I don't know. It loses the melodrama for me, of especially the first two Hellraiser films. They're like Coronation Street, I said. Yeah. It's like Coronation Street dives into the depths of hell. It's just such an odd pairing. And I love it. And so this one to me, it didn't tick the boxes. The pass marks for me are Jamie Clayton as Pinhead. Get Jamie Clayton back as Pinhead if you're going to make another one. She's terrific. She almost looks kind of bored throughout the movie, as in, like, none of this stuff is interesting. I'm a demon leader from hell.
Yeah, I just need to collect a soul, and that's it.
I'm collecting a soul, fucking day job. Get her back, but get weird with it. Get fucking insane with, like, this is a franchise built on all the things I've mentioned before, and to me, they turned it into a teen slasher movie. Now, is it well made? Yes. Is it well acted? Yes. Does it look good? Yeah, it looks fine. So, objectively, there are better production points to it than certainly Hellraiser 4 and 5. So, immediately, it's not the worst Hellraiser film I've seen, but it's the one that I found the least engaging, the least interesting, the least willing to interact with any of the ideas that Hellraiser poses.
Well, I think it's okay. And so at
that, I'm like, I don't care.
From a point of view of someone who haven't seen anything, because, Callum, we're not here to talk about if you've seen the other ones and compare.
But you're here to talk about what the movie does well and doesn't do well.
But to me, it's okay. Watch it and hope that we get a second one, that it's actually, this is a start, like star point from all this thing, and so
anyway, hopefully that wasn't too rambling and
from Callum, yes.
I think it was, yeah. From Callum, yes. Think it was, yeah. It's been a few months since we've done an episode. I need to get back in the rhythm of it, so this one, take a pass at this one. Anyway, next week we will be doing Halloween Ends. And until then, gracias por escucharnos.
Y hasta la próxima.